land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Good evening and happy Shabbat. Welcome to Yada Yah Radio. We are here with both JB and Kirk. JB made it in time after baking cookies with his daughter. That's a good dad for you. And I am delighted that we have Kirk with us. It's been an arduous week with Terry and what, over 9 hours worth of surgery this week, correct?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
But a world-class team of doctors and a first-class hospital, and she was in good hands and room seven of all possible locations.
And yes, number indeed. Seven. That was great. Absolutely amazing.
Yes. Oh. Indeed. So she's up now. She's walking about, eating a little bit, and we're hoping that she is now in the process of making a recovery from what has been really a frustrating and long period where they couldn't diagnose this mass that had been growing around her intestines and then at her stomach. Yes,
long time.
Yeah. It has been removed, however.
Yes, it has, and hopefully.
Yes.
Hopefully, it's all gone, and we'll be back up to our usual ways here pretty soon. A few weeks from now, maybe we'll just have to see. We're taking baby steps, and that's the way it is. Yeah.
Well, the fact is, you don't have any usual ways anymore because you're retired.
Well, yeah, this is. You'd be surprised how my time has filled up.
Yeah, sure.
But in any case, can you tell me what verse we're on? 89, 40 or 41 is something thereabouts? Is that correct?
I showed we're much earlier than that. 89:16.
Oh, okay. Well, we're way back. Okay, I got lost track over the while I was in the lobby sitting there for so long and reading, so I got confused.
Yeah.
You're ahead of the class.
It begins, in your name they rejoice every day, and in your justice and vindication by being right, they are lifted on high. God is obviously speaking to those, well, in fact, his last statement was that delighted to show the way and blessed are the people who are aware of and acknowledge Teruah, who walk with the light into your presence, of your presence, of Yahweh. It is was an amazing experience last week as we dialed in to the realization that while this has been all about Yahweh's plan and how he has elevated Dode to the pinnacle of what he is trying to achieve and how he wants us to relate to him, that Yao interjected the statement regarding Teruah, because it really defines our mission. And that's one of the things that I think most people would have no appreciation of, is how near and dear this probably least respected, least understood, least celebrated of all the Mikra actually is. You know, it's everybody's aware that Passover exists. Christians ignore it, of course, but at least they know there's this thing called Passover, and Jews celebrate it. And while they don't specifically announce unyeasted bread, that is the, if you were to have a collective name for the 3 days, it's unyeasted bread. Mm-hmm. And while there isn't much of an understanding of what firstborn children represents, it's still part of Pesach, Matzah, and Makkorim, and the 3 days that commence the first month in the first month of the year. And even Christians have misappropriated Shavua, calling it Pentecost, which is seven sevens plus one from Matzah, or exactly seven sevens from Makkorim, where between these 4 days we are become immortal, we are perfected, we are adopted into Yahweh's family, and we are enriched and empowered by him. This leads to the final three. And it is really takes a keen understanding of what Yah was trying to achieve over time to appreciate the relationship between the last three Moed Mikra. Teruah is to shout out an alarm while conveying the good news about the path that Yahweh has provided home. It is equal parts a warning, which would be a condemnation, and a commendation in terms of what Yahweh is offering and how we can avail ourselves of it. And it is only until these things are known that reconciliation is possible. So Teruah is the trumpet that is blowing prior to Yahweh reconciling his relationship with his children. And I would be willing to warrant a bet, and I'd lay down considerable odds, that until we came to realize what Teruah represents, there wasn't anyone celebrating it. Now that sounds extreme, but think of this for a moment. It's really only Jews that even recognize that some of these Moed Mikra exist, and the Jews have deliberately changed the name of Teruah. They don't celebrate it as Teruah. You know, for them, it is Rosh Hashanah, which means mm-hmm. head of the year, the yeah. Babylonian New Year. And it's been Rosh Hashanah for a couple of millennia, maybe longer. And so mm-hmm. Jews celebrate it as Rosh Hashanah, and nobody else even acknowledges it. And yet it's this Mikra of the seven that is most central to what we have been called to achieve. It's the Mikra that most or best describes our approach. Now, there is an aspect to this this celebration of Teruah that makes it absolutely consistent with the approach Yahweh has taken from the beginning and that we have taken from the beginning, which is that we don't just share what Yahweh is offering and how to avail ourselves of it. We don't just present the Torah instructions and the covenant conditions and the Mikra invitations. We don't just explain how marvelous Yahweh is and how wonderful it will be to live in his presence. We've come to realize that until we are willing to do as God consistently does, and no one does more than Dode, among humans and expose and condemn man's ways, expose and condemn religion and politics and governance and military schemes and economic schemes and shattering the myths, if you will, of conspiracies, that it's essentially impossible for someone who is steeped in, well, really, I was going to say in today's culture, but it doesn't matter what time you may have lived. Anyone who is engaged in any way or influenced any way by their society has to first understand that almost everything they're told is untrue. Because while we are given this opportunity to accept the terms and conditions of the covenant and answer the invitations to meet with God seven times each year, these things are not possible until we first walk away from our political and religious and conspiratorial affiliations. And who's going to do that until someone takes the time to explain what's wrong with them? And without doing this, without exposing the corruption of Babylon, without calling people out of Babylon, it is really unlikely that God's children, Israel and Yehudim, are going to find their way home, which would mean that reconciliations would be stillborn. And reconciliation is the result of doing a good job on Teruah. If we maximize the opportunity that God has given us and encouraging us on regarding Teruah, of sharing his message while exposing religion, then we really are going to have a small harvest. So I think it defines who we are. And more than anything, it defines who Dodo is. You know how many times I've read Christian reviews of David's Psalms, and they always say, you know, he's always bellyaching over how many enemies he has. He hates his enemies, and he's constantly asking God to eliminate his enemies. Well, there's a reason. He understands that the nature and the purpose of Teruah. And far too few people appreciate that today. Jews certainly have lost it. They don't want to criticize anything, including the Muslims that are trying to kill them, including the Christians who have hunted them down and attacked them for the last 2,000 years. So Teruah is central to who we are. And so flowing out of that, it says, in your name, those who celebrate Teruah rejoice every day. And in your justice and vindication by being right, they are lifted on high. I don't know. Am I the only one here that views Teruah as the most important of the Mikra? Are we, you know, just so enamored with the lamb?
I think
the
from
lamb
our point of view, it is.
Go ahead.
I said from our point of view, it is. Yeah, depending on where you're at in history, you know, each one has a different significance, but where we are now, it's the most important one. Yeah, it's the next one to be fulfilled.
Yes. And I think it's likely that it's going to be in 2028 that it's going to be fulfilled, based upon what we learned last week during the first day of the seventh month. So I think it's going to be what we determined that it's Tuesday, September 19th, and 2028 is the likely time of its fulfillment. Too soon, really. There's so much more to do, and we have so much responsibility to do it. Now, I will tell you that, and I think this is true with all of us, this idea that the first part is just germane to us. We rejoice in Yahweh's name. We know it. We use it. We love it. We encourage everyone around us to have an appreciation for it. I mean, it's one of the great lies of all time, the Jewish and Christian lies that that out of respect for the name, we're not going to say it. Out of respect for the name, we're going to remove it and replace it 7,000 times from his testimony. That's the dumbest idea I've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
The second part here, though, guys, is not something we think about. We recognize that tzedakah is important. Justice, vindication, being right. We have this great affinity for wanting to be right about what God said, being correct. But being lifted on high isn't something we think about, other than, you know, we want to enjoy the benefits of the covenant, which is to be empowered and enriched, which is to be lifted way beyond the three dimensions that we're currently residing in. But in that sense, I think lifted on high fits us beautifully. But once we're there with everyone else that has availed themselves of the covenant, I know I don't want to be above anyone else. I just look at it as lifted. We're going to enjoy the benefits afforded every covenant member.
What more could you ask? I mean, really?
That's good enough.
That's being first equal.
Uh-huh.
Yes. You know, and I know we make a very big deal about Yahweh's name, knowing how to pronounce it, why it's important to pronounce, and how the Yod is Yahweh's hand reaching down and out to us, and the Hey is, it was originally drawn as a person standing up, looking up, reaching up to God, someone who is observant, and how the Hey is pronounced Ah in Hebrew, and the Wah is a tent peg, pronounced O in Hebrew. Great example of it would be Shalom. The O sound in Shalom is from the Wah. Torah is the same thing. The O sound in Torah is from the Wah. It's a tent peg which secures the tent, enlarges it, adds to everyone that is part of it. And it concludes with a Hey, making the name both feminine and telling us that the two people standing up, reaching up, looking up to God are likely the two first invitees into the covenant, Abraham and Sarah. That's Yahweh's name, and we celebrate it. And that is the first step to knowing God, is to acknowledge and proclaim his name. It is where the path begins to being right regarding who he is, what he's offering, and how we should engage with him to avail ourselves of the blessings. So we do so without hesitation or equivocation. Now, as the psalmist steps forward into Yahweh's light, he can't resist now including himself among those who are enveloped and adorned, really, in Yahweh's radiant power. So he writes, "Indeed, your power is their adornment. Our status and reliance is lifted up by your desire to be accepting. For our deliverance and protection are from Yahweh." You know, both you guys translate. My guess is that when you're writing commentary, it's kind of natural to change voice in terms of the pronouns. You know, you want to talk mm-hmm. about the members of the covenant family are going to enjoy, and so you'll talk about them in third person. But in the midst of it, you almost always slip into first person, we.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happening here. The psalmist is saying, you know, in your power, in your might, and your capability, they're adorned, covered in your status and radiance. And that's how they are lifted up. And then he, you know, just transfers to our status is raised. by your desire to be accepting. For our deliverance and protection are from you, Yahweh. So he does the same thing we all do. It's almost impossible not to.
Yeah, you see yourself in it because you're a part of it.
Correct. And I wish everyone could do as this psalmist has done and convey these things in first person. But he recognizes that it's Yahweh's desire to be accepting. He wants to deliver and protect us, and he is the source of those things. Deliverance is one of the things we talked about at length several shows ago. It's, you know, when the Hebrew word yasha for salvation. Well, everyone wants to render it salvation or to save or savior. That's not its primary connotation. It only means to save in the sense of being freed from danger, to be delivered from something that would otherwise be harmful. Mm-hmm. And so you're saved from a bad situation. But it's all about freedom and liberation. And as such, the word properly understood is a much better explanation of the purpose of the Torah. You know, if it was laws, then salvation, okay, but you would never have liberation if it was laws, because laws, they regulate behavior. You have to obey laws. You're not free to do as you wish in a country of laws. But to be liberated means that there are no laws. You know, teaching is liberating. Guidance is liberating. The more I know about, you know, how to operate an airplane, the more free I am to fly wherever I need to go. Teaching, guidance are liberating. And the Torah is liberating. It's God's goal is to free us. Constantly says that he freed us from bondage and the crucibles of human oppression in Egypt and Mitzrayim. So indeed, your power is their adornment, and our status and radiance is lifted up by your desire to be accepting. For our deliverance and protection are from Yahweh. Accordingly, the set-apart one of Yisrael is our king. Kodesh. Both of you guys, I'm sure, have analyzed Kodesh. It is translated holy in almost all English Bibles, the Holy One of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Israel ever had a Holy One.
No. And you don't want to be a Choli from Holy or Holy from Choli either. That's a negative word.
No.
A very bad choice in words, translations.
Yeah. And you know, lots of Jews had holes in their head, and lots of them ended up with holes all throughout their body. They had so many adversaries. But holy is a pagan concept. There is no holy one of Israel. Set apart is one of the most important concepts in all of Yahweh's testimony to understand. If you don't understand set apart,
easily one of the top 10 words.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. The various forms of Kodesh are in the top 10 words easily in terms of importance to understand. If you understand that the Spirit is set apart, you know that the Spirit is not the second or third person in the Godhead. You know there is no God.
Nothing even separate.
No.
You know there is no Trinity. You're not even a separate individual. You are part of Yahweh, set apart from him to accomplish something. Yahweh's testimony is set apart. His Torah is set apart. His covenant is set apart. Yoshe is set apart. Now he's telling us that Dod is set apart.
Yes.
What set apart means, there's two ways to look at it. One is that the covenant is part of Yahweh, set apart from him. The Spirit is part of Yahweh, set apart from him. Yosha is a diminished manifestation of Yahweh, set apart from him. Dod represents Yahweh. He's his set-apart shepherd and king. The second aspect of it is that you can be of the world or set apart from the world. You can be that which is profane and common or that which is very select and unique. And so if you want
to
be...
The draw.
Yeah, if you want to be part of the covenant, you have to be set apart from religion and politics.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be set apart to God, and God sets apart some aspects of his nature, like his word, his invitations, and the like, for us to engage so that we can see them, act upon them, accept them. What have I missed? I mean, I just see this as such an important concept.
You know, without getting you off track, this week I studied, I kind of waded into Dod versus Yosha. And
yeah.
And I went to the story of Abraham and Yishuk and the Passover lamb. And
yeah.
And we all know that this is an event that foreshadowed 33 CE. And obviously the story is told so we'll understand and get a greater understanding than just rote information.
Mm-hmm.
And I was starting to think about the lamb, and then I noted that Abraham, what I wrote down is I said, you know, he didn't herald the lamb. He didn't worship it. He didn't create a gold image of it. He didn't name it. He didn't quote it. He didn't even revere it. He was thankful that Yah provided it. But that's as much as you can say. So this love affair with Yosha being raised up as King of Kings and all that kind of is washed away by, if you think about that story, because that's why the story was told, so we'd understand more. Yosha was the bodily sacrifice, and of course the soul, we've learned that Yahweh created that for this event, because only a soul could go into Sheol to begin with, so that's how you have to fulfill Matzah. By providing, he said, I'll provide the lamb. And that's the part that paid the price for our toll of crossing over. So I started thinking about crossing over, and this allowed me just a few minutes, if you would. So I looked up the word Hebrew, and the first time it appears is Genesis 14:13. So I looked up Hebrew and looked at the letters, and that's Ibri. You know, like the Iberian Peninsula in Spain, we talked about that a long time ago, and it means one from beyond. Now, the letters are interesting because it is what you just said a few minutes ago. It's a perspective with an eye on the house, family home, which is drawn as the bet, and it's followed by the rosh, a man or a woman who is
Gark?
I'm sorry?
I think you just faded. You faded off there.
Oh, I did? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine now.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was just referring to the letters of Hebrew, and it's just a couple
yeah.
more minutes, and this will make some it's pretty interesting stuff, I think. You have the Ayin, which is we use that as perspective, meaning perspective. The perspective they're looking at is looking at the house, the family home, and the bet, which is the tent. Then the followed by the Rosh, which is the person being observant. And they're observing in the next word in the same direction, going in all the right directions, is the Yod, which is lifting up. So that is the yield of it for being a Hebrew, and that's the meaning of the Hebrew. He was a descendant of Eber, Abraham, and I looked up Eber. So Eber is the same three-letter root, is the perspective and the house, and, of course, the one who is observant. And he's the descendant, of course, of Shem. And then I looked up the verbal root, as you've taught us to do. Make sure you look at the verbal roots and so forth, as well as when it first appears and how it means. And that's Abar, which is written exactly the same way, but the verb means to pass over, which is interesting, to cross over from death to life. from Babylon to Israel. And I thought, boy, hey, you know, Yahweh don't miss a trick. I mean, everywhere I look, it's the same. And as you were talking, I'm going, yeah, that's in there, and that's in there, and that's in there. And then I got thinking, too, my last little bit before I leave y'all, just tell me what you think. I can't find anywhere, and correct me if I'm wrong, I can't find anywhere that Yah has ever abandoned the Hebrews, Israel, because they didn't glorify Yosha.
No, they didn't know who he was.
No, they didn't know who he was.
They knew Yosha
had
been known, but that's about it.
Fighting, and they became, they passed over, they went from life to, from death rather to life, from Babylon, the symbolism there, to Yahweh. And that the thing that Yahweh always hates is because they became religious, political, and military. So the same theme applies all the way through. But I was just interested because everything you were doing in your commentary is pretty much simply stated, far more simply than what you do, but simply stated in the simple words of Abraham's story and the word Hebrew.
Yeah, I want to tell you that your explanation of Pesach is something I never thought of. I mean, obviously, it is a dress rehearsal, a prophecy of what would occur 2,000 years or 40 Yobel later on the same place, with Yahweh providing the Pesach Eil, the Passover lamb. But what I had never dawned on me previously, and I think it was actually brilliant, is that Yishak lived, Abraham got to enjoy being a father, both were accepted into the covenant and therefore are now sons and daughters, both really sons, father and son, both sons of Yahweh, and they enjoyed their fellowship with him in this place. But there was no naming of the lamb.
No.
There was no worship of the lamb. There was no altar. I mean, so many times, you know, all the way through here, that something profound happens, and Moshe and Abraham and everybody builds altars.
Yeah.
There was no altar here.
No, it's nothing.
No house of God. No altar. No, nothing.
No.
Thank you very much. That's profound.
Well, that's just another nail in the coffin of Yosha being what,
right.
Not being the lamb and trying to make him into the shepherd. He's not the shepherd.
Yeah.
He's
not the shepherd. He's the lamb.
No.
And the other thing I thought was just really brilliant is that Yahweh must have 1,000 things that he rails against Israelites for doing that have destroyed the relationship. You know, it says, you know, you're chasing after false gods. You are engaged doing the ways of the Gentiles. You didn't honor the Shabbat. You didn't respect my name. I mean, it just goes on and on about all of these things that they did. They started worshiping idols and making idols and you name it.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? He doesn't once say that I'm going to renege on all of the promises I've made to you and I'm going to engage with the Gentiles because you killed my son.
Yeah, exactly.
Not once, not ever.
Not one hint of that, because, well, the fundamental truth is, beyond the fact that crucifixion is a holy Roman
enterprise,
form of death, they didn't invent it, the Assyrians invented it, but the Romans perfected it, the crucifixion with nails. And the Roman was a Roman invention, and the Romans popularized it. And so it's a Roman form of death. And the decree to crucify him was from a Roman governor. The Jews,
in the area had no authority whatsoever. They couldn't if they wanted to.
Right. But if the Jews did what the Torah prescribed and present the Passover lamb for the sacrifice, if the high priest brought Yosha to the sacrifice, then we ought to be thanking them.
Yeah. That's not
because
a negative.
It's for damn sure the Romans and the Christians wouldn't have done so. And, you know, we're going to get into the realization that there's very little in the Christian New Testament that's even remotely true, much less reliable. But let's say that that there are occasionally aspects of stories that are so counter to Christianity that they're likely to be true. Otherwise, why would they be there? One of those is the story where Yosha is explaining, listen, I need to go to Jerusalem. That's where we're headed. We're going to go celebrate Passover. And then, you know, I'm going to be the Passover lamb. And Shimon, who has been renamed Peter, jumps up and has a conniption fit. No, never. We never let that happen to you. And you're like, you're not going to become the Passover lamb, which is the Christian approach. Don't kill him. Don't be killing our God. No. You're not going to be Passover lamb. And what did Yosha say? Get behind me.
What do you
think
I'm here for?
You don't have the things of God at heart, but instead the things of man. You don't have God's interest at heart. Get behind me, Satan. That's why he was here. That was God's intent. And so Yosha becoming the Pesach lamb was the intent. Had he not done so, there would be no eternal life.
Right.
And so the Jews actually performed a service in presenting him for that act. Something that very few people think about. And that is why one of many reasons they were not condemned for doing so, but would actually have been commended.
That would have been there, what they
right.
should have done. Yeah.
Right. He's not the Messiah. He's not the Son of God. He's the Passover lamb. That's the purpose. You know, Passover lambs don't write. They're not responsible for giving a testimony. They don't start religions. They aren't worshipped. They don't bow down to them. Passover lamb. So I think that's the second really brilliant insight that can be derived. And let's just say, for hypothetical sake, you know, that this whole the entire concept of the Christian New Testament was written such that all of the promises that God had made to the Jews were instantly taken away because the Jews plotted to kill Jesus. And that's the story.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, the story is a complete fraud. It was created by the Roman Catholic Church. The story is an absolute and utter fraud. But that is the story that it tells. And when you think of what the Jews did, over, you know, from the time of Abraham to the you know, the 2,000 years to the time of Yosha, and even from the time of Dodd, the 1,000 years to the time of Yosha, and how the kings, even Solomon, you know, bringing in idols and worshiping false gods and taking his name out of his testimony and replacing it with the Lord. When you think of the things they did in violation of the covenant and in opposition to the Torah over that 1,000 years, presenting Yosha as the Passover lamb wouldn't rank in the top 100. And if God didn't give up on them and said, I'm still going to resolve my relationship with you during all that period of time previously, it sure as hell not going to change. with this event. And to their credit, the rabbinical types recognized that Yosha could not be the Messiah. He was not a Gabor. Clearly says that this person is going to be a Gabor. They knew that he had not been anointed. They recognized that. He didn't qualify. So it's important that we appreciate these things. You know, I did receive a letter this week from somebody who said, would you, you know, please stop talking about the greatness of Dode and start talking more about the greatness of Yahweh. And
I wish
you
quoted Yahweh talking about Dode. So.
Well,
when God stops, we will stop.
Yeah, there you go.
The greatness of Yahweh is shown through Dode.
Yeah,
it's like the ultimate achievement.
I'm promising you the same stuff, JB. I mean, so why would you bring it on, man?
Yeah, the greatness of Yahweh is shown through Dode. And the means to experience the greatness of Yahweh is revealed by
Dode.
And the reason that this is so important, that, you know, we're going to talk about it as long as the passages that we are translating deal with it. But there are a couple of reasons that this is vital, and it's so important for the world to hear. So because of Christianity, and to some degree even Islam, the Passover lamb has been removed from the role of the Passover lamb and has been given all of the attributes that were ascribed to Dode and is being worshipped as a god. Misses the entire purpose. And the person that God most wants us to learn from, to appreciate, has been relegated to somebody that donated some sperm and threw a rock.
You say Dode, most people can only relate it to Goliath. They can't even think of David outside of Goliath.
Right. And if God wanted us to worship him, then it's for damn sure he's not going to come as a Passover lamb. And Dode is the perfect example of why did Yahweh choose to create the universe and conceive life and convey his Torah and covenant. Dode is the perfect example.
Yeah.
He's his son. Somebody that could genuinely choose to engage with him and love him, learn from him, enjoy his company. And so in this flawed individual with keen intellect and superior attributes and passion, we get to see what God most values. And the more we know about what God loves, the better our relationship is going to be with him. And there is
reason. If you want to come to know God, come to know what God likes, come to know what God hates, and embrace one and reject the other. And Dode gives us that example better than any other person in all of history. So why would I not focus on him?
Well, there is one aspect of Dode that is absolutely essential to us engaging in a relationship with Yahweh. And I don't think this idea is presented through anybody else. And that is the importance of being right. Yahweh constantly tells us that Dode was right.
Mm-hmm.
And so if this flawed individual was right with God and therefore was chosen by God, was declared God's son, it is only because he was right about God. Therefore, what's the most important thing for us? Faith?
You're right.
Good?
Yes.
Or to be right? Dode clearly wasn't good. Dode had no faith. But he was
no,
right.
You know, see, I love that because that is like my greatest driving force. I want to be right. And, you know, you always hear the joke in marriage, you know, you can be right or you can be happy. I couldn't.
Yeah.
I can't settle that. If I'm right, I'm not going to admit I'm wrong because I won't be happy admitting I'm wrong if I'm right.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Right,
I agree.
Is important. Being right is important. And if someone doesn't, yeah, if you think I'm wrong, prove me wrong. I want to know. But don't tell me I'm wrong and expect it to just end at that. Now, there is nothing
yeah.
more important than being right. Not a big point of, like, not admitting you're wrong. Like, oh, I have to be right, so I'll never admit I'm wrong. But, no, being right. Yeah, being accurate. Yeah, if you're wrong and someone shows you you're wrong, you want to be right, you admit you were wrong, and then you're right.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, right, particularly in what we're doing. If you're going to go out there and say, this is what Yahweh said as completely and accurately as we can render it, and this is how it applies to our lives, you really want to be right. I mean, the consequence of being wrong is devastating. The consequence of being right is extraordinary. So I don't think there's anybody that wants to be right more than we do. And it's because of the message we're conveying and on whose behalf we're conveying it. So all of those reasons.
We're wrong. Show me where. I'm more than happy to correct.
Yeah. Well, you know, the more I translate and the more we talk and the more we write, the more what we have come to recognize as true is affirmed. Every possible time it's affirmed. And sometimes it's affirmed with surprises. We did not expect that Yahweh was going to make these kinds of announcements regarding Dove.
No, we didn't.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
But when you think about it and how Dode is the living embodiment of the covenant and all that Yahweh sought to achieve, you recognize that it's right.
Yes.
So the last reason, by the way, that we do and will continue to speak about Dode, particularly as Yahweh brings him up, and he's brought up in a thousand different prophecies. So that's a lot. That's more than anyone else. Is that, yeah, as the living embodiment of Teruah, as a celebration, our whole message is a celebration of Teruah. Our principal responsibility is to encourage and facilitate reconciliations, where Yisrael and Yehuda are reconciled together and with Yahweh, such that the Torah is integrated into their lives, and that they are then prepared to camp out with God for all eternity. That's the purpose of Teruah. And so by being able to boldly and bluntly and consistently share with Jews around the world that it's not about Jesus. Please, don't be a Jew for Jesus. Please don't be a Messianic Jew. You know, don't be a Hebrew Roots Movement person. Don't try to blend Rabbinical Judaism and Christianity together. Come to recognize that the Messiah, the King of Kings, the Son of God, is Dode. And for Jews, they don't have to then accept the individual whom they have been blamed over the centuries for having killed, the one whose religion
brought them more pain and misery than anything else.
Right, right, brought them genocide.
No joke.
So reconciliations would have about four people that participate if it means that they had to accept the Jesus of Christianity. Because the Jesus of Christianity, even in the words that are ascribed to him, has brought genocide upon them. And Dode is offering them life. So it is essential that we continue to share what God has shared. And we, one of the things I always want to encourage us to do, we have come upon many, many hundreds, perhaps a thousand, the unique insights that heretofore haven't been spoken of, haven't been communicated bluntly, clearly, courageously, based upon Yahweh's testimony. And one of those is the realization that Dode is the Messiah, that Dode is the Son of God, that he's the King of Kings, that he is Yahweh's chosen one, the embodiment of the covenant. That's something that we have uniquely come upon as an insight gleaned from Yahweh's testimony. Just like each of the seven Moed Mikre have a specific purpose, and that the first four of them deliver the five benefits of the covenant, and that the covenant has five terms and conditions and five benefits. That the set apart spirit is feminine, that we talked about the importance of being set apart and how that relates to everything God is conveying to us, that Yahweh's name is important and that it is pronounced Yahweh, that there are three destinations for human souls. And we can go on and on and on. But every time that we come to one of these, it would be inappropriate for us to hide it.
Mm-hmm.
These are the things that we must share.
Thank you for sharing, Julian.
Yeah. Indeed, your power is their adornment, and our status and radiance is lifted up by your desire to be accepted, for our deliverance and protection are from Yahweh. Not from Jesus. From Yahweh. According to the set-apart one of Yisrael, accordingly, the set-apart one of Yisrael is our king. And Hebrew is timeless. Now, when these words were written, they were written by the man who was second wisest to Solomon. Dode had passed. Now, he would be revived. He will, you know, he is the king of the second coming. But when he says he is our king, Solomon was the king at the time these words were written.
Mm-hmm.
But Dode is going to be the king of Yisrael when this will all be celebrated. God promised Dode that the kingdom of Yisrael would be his eternally. So Dode ought to be your king, the beloved. This does hint on something. It's another one of those insights that we came to understand way back, I think, in the first few chapters of Yada Yah, which that the set-apart spirit's means of perfecting us is to adorn us in a garment of light. And that's what is being spoken of here, with the radiance, which enables us to be lifted up. It's an enlightening, perfecting, immortalizing, and empowering adornment. It is how the imperfect appear perfect. And if this is not a magic eraser that's a racist thing, it's not like throwing out the trash. The trash still exists. Where there is light, there is no darkness. Light replaces darkness. It eliminates darkness. It resolves darkness. It obliterates darkness. And so this garment of light doesn't just make us appear perfect, it makes us perfect. It makes us brilliant and enlightened. And light is as energy, is essentially almost infinitely more powerful than matter. Now, as we know, Kodesh is universally corrupted to holy in English Bibles. So the set-apart one of Yisrael is our king, is rendered the Holy One of Israel is our king. And then by the Twistians, it is taken out of context to infer that our king is Jebus, their imaginary friend, because religions have made him holy. But this psalm has been devoted to declaring that Dod is the one God selected. He's the one God distinguished, setting him apart from all others. It's Dod who is set apart to be the shepherd and king of Israel. When Yahweh anointed Dod, not once but three times, by anointing, he's setting him apart for service. Yahusha was set apart from Yahweh. He was not set apart from Yisrael. In fact, when Yahusha came, there was not even a Yisrael. It didn't exist. Yisrael, the United Kingdom of Yisrael, existed at the time of Dod, and Dod was set apart from all others to be its king. When Yahusha came, he was set apart from Yahweh, not Yisrael, and Yisrael did not exist. This is not hard to figure out. All you have to do is be logical, rational. You know, the lingering conflicts that Christians must ignore is that Dod's name is ascribed to this prophecy and Jesus' name was not. Dod, as I mentioned, was the king of a unified Israel, and Jesus had no kingdom to call his own. As I mentioned, Yehuda was all that was left of Israel at the time. Moreover, Dod was set apart from Israel, consistent with the text, while Yahusha was set apart from Yahweh. That is to say that we all should be saying, Dod is the set apart one of Israel. Dod is our king. I never thought I would accept a king, much less a man as a king.
But a shepherd king.
But
that's
I'll go along with this. Yeah, what is our choice, really? go along with this? Or
that too, but he's not enslaving you. He's not that kind of king.
No.
He's trying to see you and lift you up.
Yeah, trying to guide you, protect you, enlighten you. I mean, this is the king that can sing. This is the king, you know, I love a good ballad. This is a king that writes and sings the greatest ballads of all time. And this is a king that likes to play, that likes to party, that likes to live life large. Now, in a moment, we're going to witness yet another transition from the psalmist's voice to Yahweh's voice. God is going to say some extraordinary things. If your reverence for Yahusha, Jesus, continues to supersede your respect for what Yahweh has chosen to accomplish through Dod, we're reaching a point where you may want to rethink that position. Yahweh is telling us a wonderful story. In fact, it's a love story. At the time you spoke in Revelation, to your dedicated and faithful ones, saying, I have provided assistance, supplying what is needed on behalf of the one with the strength to prevail, Gabor. I have raised up and exalted the chosen one, Bakar, from the people. I discovered and made known Dod, the beloved, my co-worker, my authorized agent who works on my behalf from a bed. Out of my oil, which sets apart, dedicating the recipients to service, Shemen Kodesh Ani, I have anointed him, Mashach, I've applied the oil, dedicating him for my purpose. So that to show the way to the relationship, my hand will be established and steadfast with you. In addition, my protective shepherd, Zeruah, shall empower and embolden you, strengthening you. Wow. Okay, so first of all, on this prophecy, it has to be applied to Dod. Why?
Because it says Dod.
So it does, doesn't it? Okay. So we're going to assume that Yahweh knows the difference between King Dod and everyone else, including Yosha. It says Dod. Right. So God is saying that he made, or the psalmist is saying that, yeah, well, you made revelations to your dedicated and faithful ones. It's be through his prophets. And you told the prophets that you were going to supply what was needed on behalf of the one with the strength to prevail. So what we should be looking for here is the realization that Dod is presented prophetically such that we would have an appreciation of how a flawed, normal guy, albeit with some superb attributes, was made so successful and was elevated to this status wasn't because Dod had it all together. It was because Yahweh supplied him with whatever he needed. That's good news for the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed.
God's going to supply us with the strength to prevail. That's what we ought to be seeing in Dod. It's not that Dod was the most courageous guy, the guy willing to fight to protect God's flock, the guy capable of writing the most inspired lyrics and singing the most beautiful songs. It's that this man became special because God gave him the strength to prevail. The next statement is, I raised up and exalted the chosen one from the people. Well, Yosha most certainly wasn't raised up from the people, was he?
No.
But Dod was. And Dod is the chosen one, not Yosha.
Correct again.
But this idea of raising. Yah was going to raise the essence of Dod, not his physical body, it's, you know, that was destroyed 3,000 years ago.
Been dust for years.
And done when it.
But the only part of Dod that matters is his soul, his inner nature, his reservoir of his character and attributes and attitudes, his soul. Yahweh is going to raise up and then exalt that soul. And under normal circumstances, you would say, wait a minute, raise, that means that was the word that was used in Greek to speaking of Jesus being raised from the dead. Well, to raise doesn't mean that a dead body is going to be reanimated. To raise is what parents do with children. They raise their children. And parents want to exalt their children. They want their not only their children to succeed, but we want bragging rights. You know, we want to say, hey, my kid did good. You know, you're not trying to lord over somebody else with, you know, saying that your kid's better than their kid, but you want to be proud of your kid. That's what I was saying here. I raised him, and I'm proud of him. Particularly this one, this my chosen one, from the people, from the family. And then, you know, I was making another statement here that is equally important to these previous ones we've just considered. I discovered and then made known, though, my coworker. All right, three aspects of this. I discovered. Yahweh discovered Noah, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yahweh discovered Moshe.
Found him right out there in the desert, yeah.
Yep. Yahweh discovered Abram, didn't he?
Yes, sir.
Dod was not in the center of action. He was down there tending sheep in Bethlehem. That's not where it was happening. God found him. He discovered him. What that is telling us is that free will works both ways. God has it, so do we. And that in most cases, since God tells us that he is the one reaching out to these people and introducing himself, rather than this idea of being evangelist and going out to saving the world, that's not the role that we ought to be playing. God is the one who reaches out to those he wants to have a relationship with. Our job, therefore, isn't to solicit them, but to provide the information that is necessary so that there are more people that God can reach out to, and that when God reaches out to them, they're more apt to respond appropriately. So we are suppliers of information such that there are more people that God can reach out to, and that when he reaches out and introduces himself, they can respond appropriately. What do I mean by that? If we don't do our job, the preponderance of people are going to be stuck being religious or political or conspiratorial. And as such, God cannot introduce himself to them. God does not introduce himself to religious people or political people. Abraham had walked away from Babylon. Noah had disassociated himself from the local communities. Dod was so far from his father's house and the political epicenter, what was going on, he was out tending sheep in Bethlehem.
Moshe wasn't a high priest in the, you know, Pharaoh's religion. He had walked away from Egypt.
Exactly. So that this point is that not only Yahweh is created the universe so that free will works both ways. He has it and we have it. That Yahweh makes it a point to introduce himself to those that he has an interest and spending eternity with, and that we have a responsibility to make certain that more people are in a position where that is possible.
You know, I can't not point it out. What was Paul doing when he allegedly had his encounter? Had he walked away from religion? Or was he out engaged in a political or a religious mission?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he hadn't left religion. He was still steeped in it.
There was a question in the chat room that is really interesting, because I'm talking about recognizing Dod and not recognizing, I guess, the implication was with Yosha. And I am, if there's the implication that we are in any way negating the gift that Yahweh provided through Yosha, that is untrue. Without the Passover lamb and Yahweh fulfilling that promise, and particularly with what happened on matzah, on unyeasted bread, then there is no benefits associated with the covenant. There's no way for us to be adopted into Yahweh's family. And so I'm extraordinarily grateful, and we should all be grateful, that Yahweh honored his promise. Does a Yehudi have to accept that it was Yosha that performed the role of the Passover lamb? I think only to the extent that they understand what Yosha represents, Yahweh saving us. Mm-hmm. All of these prophets recognized that Yahweh was the Savior. So a Yehudi does not have to recognize Jesus or even Yosha as the Savior. They need to recognize that Yahweh honored his promise to provide the Pesach lamb. And they need to recognize that Pesach is the doorway to life. Matzah is the means to unyeast our souls of religious and political corruption, so that we can be part of God's family as his children on Bukurim, enriched and empowered on Shavuot. We need to attend those meetings, recognize what they represent, but I don't think that there's any part of that that says you have to recognize anyone other than Yahweh. You don't have to recognize Dode to be part of the covenant. But Dode certainly makes it a lot easier to be part of the covenant. You're going to understand the covenant a whole lot better if you avail yourself of what Dode said. With Yosha, it's an entirely different scenario because we don't have a single word Yosha said reliably maintained and conveyed to us. So what's there to recognize other than God honored his promise?
What can you?
That was kind of my response. Yeah, the act that Yahusha performed was necessary. I don't know how much recognizing that act really is necessary. Yeah, you know, Moshe didn't. You know, that act happened well after he was dead, but he was still part of the covenant. Dode, Abraham, you know, they recognized Yahweh's message, Yahweh's plan, and they accepted it. They didn't need to see a fulfillment of it. They trusted him to fulfill it because he had fulfilled every other promise. And, you know, you look at the time and time again where Israel fell away from Yahweh and returned. You know, they returned to the Torah. That was what was required. There wasn't a precipitating thing. And, you know, you can look at the history. You know, they had fallen away from Yahweh well before Yahusha was even a thing. You know, so that wasn't the precipitating break in the relationship even then. So, like I said, to me, I think it's just more recognizing Yahweh will fulfill his promise or has fulfilled his promise. Who did it is relatively inconsequential.
Yeah, that's my view. How he went about doing it is interesting, but it isn't as important as recognizing that he did it. Mm-hmm. He promised he was going to do it, and he did it. In fact, I've been asked, because it is a serious debate within Jewish religious and non-religious circles, as to they recognize the purpose of the Passover lamb. But the Passover lamb is not a man, and God is opposed to human sacrifice. So why did Yahweh supply the Passover lamb via the Son of Man?
It's the only way we could really understand. You know, he needed someone who could explain it, that this was what was going on.
What's he going to do, put his soul in an animal?
Well, I think you're close, guys. And I've given this a lot of thought.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been silly for God to have created this fuzzy little super-sized lammy and say, my fuzzy little super-sized lammy is going to be the lammy of all lammies for fulfillment of Pesach. That would not work because Yahweh said, I am going to provide the lamb. Providing this engineered super lamb isn't Yahweh being the lamb. Yahweh created us in his image so that we are, our physical form and our nature is the closest of all animals to God. And so
he needed something with a neshama.
Right. So if he is going to convey his nature, him fulfilling this promise, then he has to do it in the manner of a man. But keep in mind, that man's physical body is superfluous. Means nothing. Yeah. The physical body means nothing. It was just the physical body of a human, because that is the animal that's most like God.
Mm-hmm.
And keep in mind, too, in this case, in fulfilling the Passover lamb, human sacrifice means that the body and the soul are extinguished. In the case of the Passover lamb, the body was extinguished, and that was meaningless, literally meaningless,
mm-hmm.
and the soul continued on. Soul fulfilled one.
Oh, Lil.
Right. There was no human sacrifice.
Yes.
So those are my thoughts on why
I thought the same thing. I mean, his soul never died. Normally
correct.
It would die, you know.
Right. And just the body died. And in his case, because the soul did not succumb, the elimination of the physical body was rather than a human sacrifice, it was the liberation of that soul. The constraints of that body.
Right. Because it actually
went
to the shield.
Just so interesting is that, you know, Paul will claim that Dode's contribution to all of this was just being a sperm donor. But if Yosha was born of an extended seed or sperm of Dode, then he could not have been virgin born. Now, he was not virgin born, but that's the Christian myth. And so, you know, how can Paul claim that he was be the seed of Dode if, in fact, he was virgin born, which is their claim?
One or the other, not both.
Yeah, he's back himself in the corner a lot.
Yeah, and if he was God, why would he call himself the Son of Man?
He wouldn't.
Why does he never call himself the Son of God? How many times, even in the corrupted Christian New Testament, does Jesus call himself the Christ or the Son of God or God?
Never once.
But I know somebody that's called the Son of God. I know someone that's called the Messiah. And it's God that's calling him both of those things. Anyway, this says, I raised up and exalted the chosen one from among the people. I discovered and then made known Dode, my coworker. Matzah, what is the purpose of God making him known if we don't study what he said and what he did? God said, I made him known. Do you think that God made him known for
Joel? No.
No. He made
him
known.
He wants us to know.
He revealed and exposed him so that we could benefit from his life, and lyrics. That's the obvious implication. I discovered and then made Dode, the beloved. And the next line, the next statement, Ebed. Ebed in the Hebrew text is indistinguishable from Abad, written exactly the same way. They're just vocalized different with the diacritical marks by the Masoretes. Abad means to work. So Abad Ani would be my work. So Dode is my work. Dode is the one who works on my behalf. That's powerful. So why was Dode special? Because he worked on behalf of Yahweh. Dode was Yahweh's work. Lyrics. Someone who was willing to think and convey the important aspects of Yahweh's nature and the nature of the relationship and how to observe the Torah. Someone who was willing to nurture and lead and fight on the behalf of, to protect Yahweh's people in place. Someone who knew and used and loved Yahweh's name. Someone who was willing and desirous of engaging and working alongside of God. Not a lot of people are willing to do that. Most people that God approaches said, no, I don't want to do that. Dode loved the role. We don't find Dode saying, no, 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 God, find somebody else.
Not me.
Yeah. No, he said, yeah, let's go do this. Right from the beginning. He was good at it. Then out of my oil, which sets apart dedicating the recipient to service, I have anointed him. This is God making a declaration that supersedes all others. There is no other place where God says, it's my oil. And I'm the one who anointed him.
Wow.
Now, he will use the term Mashiach to say that, you know, I have chosen this person for a particular purpose. But Dode says specifically that it's his oil and that he is the one who physically anointed him. And by the way, when he is anointed in this way and you're reading the story as it's presented through the through Shemuel,
mm-hmm.
It says that the Spirit of Yahweh came upon him at that moment. And that the Spirit of Yahweh came upon him when he was a young man and never left him. It is the Spirit of Yahweh that made Yosha the diminished manifestation of Yah during the last 3 years of his earthly life. It is the Spirit of Yahweh that did something very different with Dode. The Spirit of Yahweh came upon Dode when he was a very young man, and the Spirit of Yahweh never left him with Yosha. The Spirit of God came upon him when he was 30 years old. The Spirit of God left him 3 years later on the upright pole. So Yahweh is equating his oil with the set-apart Spirit, and he is specifically saying of Dode that my oil, which sets apart, dedicating the recipient to service, I have anointed him, Mashach. I have applied the oil, dedicating him to my purpose. So that to show the way to the relationship, Asher, my hand, my influence, Yod, will be established and steadfast, Hun, with you. Now, there's an interesting, this is, again, Yahweh positioning Dode as important. I know we sound like a broken record here, but.
I know, but it's true. But
Yahweh repeats himself over and over for emphasis. It's no wonder we do.
But it explains his role right there. You just said it's such to show the way to the relationship. Yosha fulfilled. He opened the door. He saw a door to walk through.
Yes.
This is. But who's going to show you where the door is? Because
you know,
he quoted. He had nothing to quote from Yosha.
Hey, I just have a little simple question. Would you rather follow the shepherd or the Passover lamb?
The shepherd.
What do you think?
I've read enough of what Yahweh has to say about lambs. You know, when Yahweh compares us to lambs, it's not necessarily a compliment.
No, we're either
lambs
dumb
can
or
be kind of dumb animals.
No.
I'd much rather follow a shepherd than the lamb.
Right. If you're a sheep, as part of the flock, what are you going to do? You're going to follow the shepherd, or are you going to volunteer to follow in line and become the Passover lamb?
No, I think I'll go with the former.
Yeah, I'm going to follow the shepherd. Okay, so it says that my hand, my influence, will be established and steadfast with you. The reason Yosha was Mashiach, anointed the Messiah by Yahweh, is to show the way to the relationship such that Yahweh's hand, who is Dode, can be established and steadfast, authenticated and sustained, unwavering and present with us. He didn't do it for him. He did it for us. And if he did it for us, the only way we can benefit from it is to understand what he did and why he did it.
Mm-hmm. And the way in the hand is what you write with as well. And he's the one who wrote thousands, or at least hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of psalms. I mean, wow.
Yes. Yes. Source of influence, source of writing. It's our ability to act. Steadfast with you. But we're not done. This is just one. This is just 89:21. In addition, Alf, even more. You know, so often we just say the wah is in addition, you know, more, and. But in this case, it's the Alf, which is very uncommon. Even more than this, my Zeroa Ani, shall empower and embolden you, strengthening you. Now, this one, boy, thank goodness for 4QPS. All four, that's the Qumran scroll. If 4QPS didn't exist, we would be in, they say up shit creek. We'd be well up the creek without an oar. Because it says in the Masoretic that my protective shepherd, my Zeroa, shall empower and embolden him. Well, how can Dod be the protective shepherd, the one who sows the seeds of truth, because it's from Zera, if it's going to empower him? And basically, we have to completely rethink, what in the world is this Zeroa? But by changing it back to the intent, shall empower and embolden you, we're right back to the hand of Yahweh will be established and steadfast with you. And this just follows right along. In addition, my protective shepherd shall empower and embolden, strengthening you. That's what.
Now, this goes back to one of my pet peeves. You get people talking about, oh, well, the differences between the Qumran scrolls, they're minuscule. There's very little. It's a pronoun here and there. Yeah, little things. Well, pronoun here and there can change a lot of the meaning.
Yes. Yeah, here we'd be scrambling. I'd have to admit that my attempt to define, because Zeroa is one of the most important words that we have found thus far.
Oh, yeah.
And Yahweh even makes a big deal in Yashaya talking about how important it is at this time that somebody figured out that there were three Zeroa and what Zeroa represents.
Yes.
It made a declaration not just in Yashaya, but in Yashaya at the very beginning of the prophecy that introduces Yosha as the sacrificial lamb. So this is a really, really important term. God is constantly referring to Dod as his established and strong hand and as his protective shepherd. And our definition of it would not have worked if it had said strengthening him, because who strengthens Dod? Yosha didn't strengthen Dod. Moshe didn't strengthen Dod, and those are the only two candidates.
Yeah. That's right.
Now, Zeroa, one of the key aspects of this whole psalm is written to establish Dod as the single most important person in human history and to expose to us that the founder of the Christian religion, Shaul, who God calls the son of evil in this psalm, is going to try to diminish everything he represents, which is why we're sharing God's position that you ought not do that. And Paul's, the fulcrum of Pauline Christianity is Zera. Paul claims that because seed is a singular term, that you go directly from Abraham, or in the case of Dod, to Yosha, without considering anything that happened before or after, because it says seed singular. Well, seed is a plural concept. if you buy a bag of seed and they have one seed in it, you're going to take it back because there aren't thousands of seed in it. But Zoroa, Zoroa is based on Zara. In fact, it's the Zara with the addition of a wa. So if you take Zara seed and to sow, and you add a wa to it, you have Zoroa. And it is a very interesting term. It is my protective ram who shepherds the flock, one who prevails because he is effective and strong, fully resolved with the overall ability to accomplish the mission, a remarkably important and impactful individual of action who is a leader and fighter, is engaged as a shepherd among my sheep, who is fruitful in his ways, especially when sowing the seeds of truth, while denoting and advancing the purpose of the arm of God, of his shepherd and sacrificial lamb. And in this way, Yahweh is going to empower, embolden, and strengthen us. If Dod is our shepherd, we can be bold. If Dod is our shepherd and he is the one that is teaching us, we are empowered. He is the ultimate fighter on behalf of the things that are important to Yahweh. And he strengthens us. With him guiding us, we grow. Our status is elevated. So powerful concepts here all the way through. Well, fellas, we're no longer broadcasting. We are recording. But it would be hard to find a more profound, rich, truth-packed, pertinent statement than Ms. Moore, Psalm 89:21.
I guess. This is powerful stuff.
So, it's actually 19, 20, and 21, but it just all flows together. At the time you spoke in a revelation to your dedicated and faithful ones, claiming, I have provided assistance, supplying what is needed on behalf of the one with the strength to prevail, the Gibor, the mightiest of men, the strong and effective fighter, the valiant and brave warrior, the one who battles from Gabar to prevail, to be powerful, mighty, and strong. Gabor is the term that is used throughout the prophecies that Christians have usurped from Dod to their Jesus. And Jesus was never a Gabor. Dod is. Dod is the living embodiment of what it means to be a Gabor.
Yeah.
And it's not us that are exalting Dod, it's Yahweh. I have raised up and exalted the chosen one. To not give Dod his due is to say, God, you know, you're not entitled to choosing whom you want. We chose Jebus. And so we're going to exalt Jesus. We're going to even call him the Christ as if he was Greek. And that we're going to call him Christ as in Messiah. And we're going to take that title away from Dod because no one calls Dod the Messiah.
No. You heard it here first.
Yes. And so this is God saying, I raised him up and I'm exalting him. So when you hear us exalting Dod,
quoting Yahweh,
you got a problem with that. Take it up with the boss.
Right. It's not us exalting it. Take it up with the boss.
Yeah.
God exalted him, and our job is to convey what Yahweh has said.
Yeah.
We're doing as we've always done. We go where the words lead us.
Yeah. If you don't like that trip, don't go on that trip. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, sometimes we go beyond where the words lead us in one subtle way, but it's a profound way. Once you have gone consistently where the words lead, and when they lead consistently to Yahweh, And the path is through the Moed Mikre, through the covenant, and through God's lyrics, life and lyrics. After a while, because you come to have an affinity for God's plan, have a genuine respect for what Yahweh has done, revere who he is, you go from following where the words lead to embracing Yahweh's approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I will celebrate the life of Dod because Yahweh celebrates the life of Dod. And, you know, it's not flattery. I'm not kissing up.
Well, you understand why you're doing it. You understand why lifted you up.
Once you come to understand why Yahweh is doing things, you say, wow, I like that. That makes sense. I can embrace that. I'm
excited about that. That's still following where the words led. The words led.
Well, you have to say this is brilliant, and it's consistent everywhere. That's the beauty of it. Once you see it, it's like when we found out that through Dod of New Zealand that crazy person Paul, it was just we found plague of death everywhere, and now evil. What's the evil one and something else?
Right.
So it's just he's consistent. The more we learn, the more we go, wow, we missed that time, but wow, we got it now.
Once you know it, you can't help but do it. It's just inherent. Yeah. Once you know these things, once you follow those words, the reaction is, I mean, it's just. It happens. You're not doing it intentionally. It just is where you go. You can't not.
Yeah.
But after a while, you actually begin to accept Yahweh's perspective. You see things his way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure
with our limitations, but still.
But with our limitations, we find great pleasure in seeing things the way God does. He's right. I agree with approach.
Yeah.
As you come to know Yahweh and you come to know his plan, you can't help but love him. I mean, I can't. I mean, the follow your emotion kind of guy. I'm the very much the follow reason kind of guy. But I mean, as you come to know him, you come to understand his plan, you come to know him for who he is, you can't help but fall in love with Yahweh.
Yeah, it's a wow moment.
See, that emotion just. It comes. It's there.
Yeah. It's a beautiful way you put it together. It's just.
And how wonderful is it that this person that God said was right, that that he said, this is my son, the one who is his co-worker, had not only lots of flaws, but had lots of heartache.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was sharing with my best friend today, the idea that because of the sense of responsibility that comes with the possibility that the Nekri prophecies and the Choder and the Nek references might apply to me and to us, I am. Fairly often I'll say, yeah, I would really appreciate if you could simplify the rest of my life so that I'm not all on edge when I'm doing this and not attending to things that you know are out there that are responsibilities. Because like today, I came up and started writing at before 6 in the morning, before light.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent all day in this chair. I took one break to go take a walk on the beach, which I hadn't done in days. And there were lots of things that are swirling around that are responsibilities that I didn't deal with. And I'm put on edge by them. And so, you know, I will say, you know, I would really appreciate my life being simplified so that I'm more comfortable in this responsibility. And yet you know that you look at Dod with all of his responsibility, which is infinitely beyond ours, mine, mm-hmm. certainly. And, man, he had, he had his firstborn son rape his daughter. He had his third son kill his firstborn. Actually, his first son was died on the eighth day.
Really?
You know, he had his third surviving son take away his kingdom, led a coup against him. His that Absalom then was killed by his general. He had a time where, because he solicited another man's wife who was a covenant member, God had a time out for him. And, you know, so he had to even know what it was like to lose that direct contact for a while. Dodd had his issues and challenges. And I think that one of the things that, you know, and I talked to, and it sounds like I might be complaining here, and I don't mean to. I only like to share personal things because I think that the more we all know that we all are suffering from things, that's, you know, I mean, your wife and therefore you are suffering at this point, Kurt.
It's a lot on our plate right now, and no question about
that. And while we just wish it would all go away and we'd have the best possible result, that is not how we are most effective in relating to Yahweh and relating effectively to those he wants to reach. Yahweh, it does not have it easy. The chosen people have spit on him, have negated what he said, have created
open rebellion.
Religions that have rebelled against him. They have placed Satan in his spot as the god of religion. He's endured a lot. He's endured Gentiles with all of these conspiracies, blaming his people for all manner of things and perpetrating genocide against them. If we are going to appreciate Yahweh's perspective on his people and humankind, we have to have challenges in our life. You know, when you know, my shoulder screams from an old injury because now it's reactivated when I'm typing, that, well, who am I to say I shouldn't have pain with all the pain that Yahweh has endured? And if I don't understand what it's like to have broken family issues, then how in the world am I going to relate to people?
To him having his broken family.
Or to properly convey the attitude of God.
Yeah.
You can't. So part of having the right perspective, the reason Dodd was such a rich writer, conveying Yahweh's nature and his animosity for his enemies and the love for his Torah, is that Dodd suffered many of the same things Yahweh suffered. They shared the same joys. They shared the same pains. And it has always been true that a burden shared is a burden lifted. And a joy shared is a joy amplified. A burden is lessened by sharing it, and something wonderful is enhanced by sharing. So there's a lot we can learn by being, you know, more enveloped in all of these things. So this is a great place for us to stop. We may even review this next week.
Let me share two little stories with you.
Yes, please.
Well, you first of all, when Terry was walking around exercising before the around the neighborhood, people would come up to her and knew what's going on, and they would kept saying, "Oh, you poor thing," and she would correct them and get quite annoyed with them because she said, "I'm going to be fine. We're going to go to the hospital. They're going to cut out the cancer and so forth and so on." when she got there yesterday, I mean, she was already there, but when she got to the room yesterday, they sent a spiritual helper, a preacher of some kind. And by the time she was through with him, he said, you know, what you're saying makes a lot of sense, and you say things really differently. You should tell people about this. And she sent him over to Yada Yada.
I tried. They don't want to hear it.
Yeah, so I thought that was really funny, you know, because she was really wiped out. But she, yeah, she's out there tripping, you know, so setting everybody straight. So I thought that was really
interesting. Wow. Yeah.
And then
for her.
When I came home, I watched a Nova show, and this is really, you'll appreciate this. These two-bit artists somewhere working on a computer, they're basically the same type of artists like me, but one, at least one of them, and the other one, they found out technology. They decided that if they took, they found some scrolls that were burned up, or we think not destroyed, but turned into carbon. And that from a synagogue or somewhere, just a little bit older than a little bit younger rather than older rather than the Dead Sea Scrolls, but in that same general area, and they've kept them with the Dead Sea Scrolls for years and years and years. So they approached these people, and they said to them, "I think we've figured out how to, if we were to dissect this on a CAT scan." We could probably open up the scroll. And by God, the people with the Dead Sea Scrolls group that tries to keep them, you know, in Israel, take care of them, they had never tried that, and they weren't convinced, and they took a little piece of carbon, looked like a little cigar, and they scanned it, they opened it up, and it opened up everything.
Mm.
It was amazing. Wow. It's a show on Nova that I just saw last night, and I was fascinated by it. I mean, they know how a CAT scan cuts everything in little pieces, and every little nuance of it, and it turns it into. Then it can turn it into three dimensional. They open up, and guess what? Because ink has metal in it, it shows it could separate the metal words, letters, from the papyrus that have been carbonized, and it was just
fascinating.
And they said, "Wow!" Now the fact that this is happening now. It's just amazing to me. I mean, just Yahweh is doing everything he can to let everybody know, you know, this is the deal.
This is the deal.
Yeah.
I got a deal. Yeah, I got a deal for you.
Uh-huh.
And you can...
I'll cut you in on it, as we like to say it.
Yeah, I'll cut you in on it. That's, you can be cut in on it. You can be cut out
just
of it.
Cut out
you
of it,
can,
whatever you prefer.
You can accept it. You can reject it. You can ignore it. But you can't change it.
No, that's correct. Wow.
You can't Quran it, you can't New Testament.
Yeah, you can't Talmud it either.
You can't Talmud it. Yeah, you can't Talmud it. Those things are counterproductive.
Yeah.
But you can accept it, you can reject it, you can ignore it.
But why don't we just
read
it?
And I want to tell you that one of those is a lot better than the others.
Yeah.
I like the accepting it part.
I like accepting, continue to learn from it.
Gracious, as it makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Give you guys an update on this particular chapter. I did finish it yesterday, but finishing it is one thing. It's now 100 pages long, and it takes about a day to go through 10 to 11 pages in the rewrite, because you're checking everything and trying to make certain that the translations are smooth, they're clear, that the commentary is complete and worded appropriately. It just takes forever. But anyway, I'm through about like page 25 of the read through, and I did make it to the end of the chapter. It's a little over 100 pages long, so for those that are listening, this is a chapter that goes through Psalm 89. Which is speaking now of the great hero, which is Dode, but it's going to introduce the villain. The villain will be called out by name. It's Shaul. He'll be called the son of evil. It will state that he is in league with Satan and that his goal is to diminish Dode's importance. to degrade him. From there, we're going to we're going to look at both of Paul's, because Paul is Shaul. He's the one that's called the son of evil. He's the one that's called out by name. And he's the villain in this story, and he's the one that of whom it is said that he is denigrating and degrading Doe's importance. So if you were to ask most Christians, did Paul degrade David? They would say no. You know, he has got those that are really in the know that he speaks of him one time and writes of him one time. Well, what I did...
A chosen son, and he quotes him two times.
Yeah, speaks so what I
times.
Did...
Wow.
Yeah, what I did is I took the entire diatribe in Acts, I think it's Acts 13, took the entire diatribe from beginning to end, and I shared what Paul had said in that synagogue in a town that would certain right after Paul left would be called Hadrianopolis, and it made me want to puke. Mm-hmm. I was so disgusted. And not only by Paul's propensity to misappropriate what God said and to mistranslate what God said, and this idea that he was a rabbi and a student of Gamaliel, therefore would have been a Hebrew scholar, bullshit. His citations of the Torah are abysmal. That man could no more read Hebrew than the man on the moon.
I was going to say, isn't that right in line with most rabbis? You know, it's abysmal. They completely ignore it. They make arguments against it and try and twist it into all sorts of other things.
To be a top flight rabbi, Gamaliel, as he claims, taught him, you would have had to be able to read Hebrew, speak Hebrew, as well as Aramaic, which is a sister tongue to Hebrew. Paul obviously could not.
Really? Wow.
So that's the first impression. The second impression is that Paul is the founder of the anti-Semitic conspiracy of Blame the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
It is disgusting.
He comes out
and just says that the Jews are responsible for killing Jesus. And so, based upon what he you'll find a lot of this chapter deals with this, is there's probably a 50 or 60 page analysis of first, what does it say in the supposed Gospel of Matthew? Why does the Gospel of Matthew take the same anti-Semitic tone that we find in Paul's letters? And so what I had to do is to say, well, what is the basis of this Gospel of Matthew? All the way from, there wasn't even a disciple named Matthew. You know, I keep on saying, well, you know, it's an eyewitness account, the disciple Matthew. No, there was no disciple Matthew. You know, the tax collector's name was Loewy. And so I had to go through the history of that and how the anti-Semitic nature of the book came to be. And it's just a fascinating study about how there really was a Hebrew account that went only so far, and how that Hebrew account was usurped to give the resulting fraud, which was probably written sometime between 80 and 90 CE, some credibility. You know, everything Satan does has to usurp the credibility of God to be believable.
Yeah.
And how it was ultimately written over a period of hundreds of years. And then once I did that, it led me to the cast of characters that is responsible for that fraud. And I think you'll find that the history of the Gospel of Matthew, it's a riveting story that will cause you to say, there is nothing in that godforsaken tome called the Christian New Testament that's useful. Mm-hmm. And so you'll go from there.
I've been saying that for a while, but I'm still interested in hearing this story.
Oh, it's the evidence is, I'm going to tell you, it's equal parts riveting and disgusting.
Yeah.
I've come to expect.
Yeah, you have to hold your nose a lot of times to read a lot of this stuff. I'm amazed at how you can get through it. I almost want to throw up sometimes on.
Oh, I do.
Like,
I mean, I get really grumpy when I'm doing it. I mean, then we're going to look at who is the key player that is responsible for this twisting, this anti-Semitic twisting of the Christian New Testament, such that it causes not only Christians to turn on Jews, but God himself to turn on Jews and hate Jews. And you come to find out the fellow's name is Eusebius.
Eusebius, yeah.
Yeah. He was a contemporary of Constantine, Constantine's biographer. Very, very religious, very patriotic, but extraordinarily dishonest. And so we tell his story in this chapter and the role that he played in this fabrication, and then how Christianity became so anti-Semitic. And then from there, it's important for people to have an appreciation for the fact that the Roman Catholic Church wasn't just born out of anti-Semitic hatred and deliberately perpetrating and knowingly perpetrating a fraud for their own self-aggrandizement. But the history of the Roman Catholic Church and its popes, reads like the history of Roman emperors after Julius Caesar.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
One scumbag after another, and that's the history of the popes of the Roman Catholic Church. If you're a Roman Catholic and you think that your church has the keys to heaven and that popes are gods and men, oh my God!
You're
an idiot.
You're an idiot. And you're ignorant about something that you ought not be, because you're giving them your money and your devotion. And then
you're
from there,
an idiot
for being
ignorant. Yeah, there is no reason to be ignorant. You're an idiot if you are ignorant of this.
Yes, because it's central life and death. And then finally, we're going to review Paul's written presentation of Dode and how he relegates Dode to being nothing but a sperm bank. Sperm bank. And Romans 4 is every bit as nasty. It is just one rational fallacy after another. And you just shake your head and say, because you can read the Christian sites and they all say, oh, yeah, Paul makes this brilliant argument using Abraham and Dode and who could be more important to God and better examples of what God is looking for than these two people. And he explains how the Torah is not the essence of their salvation, but instead their faith. It's just nothing.
I want to bang my head into a wall just listening to that.
Oh, and you wonder, how is it that in these past 2,000 years, nobody has bothered to say, why would you believe a guy that constantly misquotes God? If he's supposed to be speaking for him, why can't he speak for him? Why does he have to misquote him all the time? How can somebody be God's representative if he's constantly contradicting God and annulling what he said?
Well, he would have to be.
I have to believe that there were people who did. They just didn't have any platform to preserve them saying it. I can't believe that nobody ever came to this. I just don't think there was what we have today with the internet, a platform to present it that would preserve it. Yeah, someone said they were considered a spook and an idiot, and their stuff was ignored and wasn't preserved.
Well, all you have to do is look at the torture implements.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Wielded by the Roman Catholic Church and the anti-Semitism that continues to this day. But the torture implements that were used over hundreds and hundreds of years by the Roman Catholic Church to torture anyone who would dare say what we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a huge disincentive. And you know something? I don't think that God saw any purpose in having this message revealed until this time, because there just wasn't going to be anyone who was going to respond prior to it. And at this point now, it has to be disseminated or there will be no reconciliations.
Well, it will be.
Yes.
It absolutely will be.
All right, gentlemen, we're about to be cut off, so I bid you good night. Best to you, Kirk, and to Terry and JB.
I hope Terry recovers well.
Yeah, Leo will be contacting you, JB. We're going to try to get this book up on a yada yada related site. I want to talk to you a little bit about the software you're using to accomplish that.
Okay.
All right.
All right, my friend.
Thank you. All right.
See you next week.
Shabbat shalom.
Shalom, shalom.